What's up? Welcome to a new episode of Movie Schmovie. This is episode 407. My name is Steve, one of the co-hosts of the show, and as always, I'm joined by
Ryan.
You know, ma'am, whenever a bunch of fellas like us, outcasts, hobos, nobodies, gentlemen loafers, one-time or all-time losers, call us what you want to, whenever we get together, we tell our funny stories. I'm John.
Yeah, I like to call you John. That's kind of what we like to call you. You can rely on John to have some sort of lead-in from like that week's required viewing, whether it's a bad accent or a nice line of dialogue. We'll go for it. Yeah, guys, good to see you both. It's gonna be a fun episode. We're gonna go through John's pick for required viewing in a moment. Also, since we last recorded, there's been some pretty cool trailers that have come out, so we're gonna kind of go through some of those. There's one that didn't come out this week that was seeming like it would by the time we record it. Kind of bummed about that, but we'll get to that conversation after the required viewing. And then otherwise, and then we're going to just talk about what we saw. Otherwise, bits, bobs all around. Let's just see what we talk about. I've got a couple to throw in, some TV, some movies. So I'm excited to get to that part of the show. But let's start. John, I'm going to take us into your choice for required viewing this week again.
All right. Well, this is a film from 1957. Starring Andy Griffith in his first film role. Like, he had been a stage actor before this. And it's written and directed by the same people that did On the Waterfront. And you know, it's got that kind of classic film kind of quality to it. It's like shot almost like a noir film in some ways, but it's, you know, it's one of those things where you look at a movie from that era and you see that, oh yeah, people were doing all kinds of acting in the late 50s. It wasn't all that kind of old-fashioned kind of acting. People were doing kind of naturalistic acting against actors that are doing more theatrical acting. And it's like, there's a real mix of like a raw human behavior almost that you almost forget they were putting, you know, people almost act like that's a modern invention. So I feel like this is one of those movies that I always knew had some modern appeal to it that in fact was not as successful when it came out as it came to be, you know, the reputation of it grew over time. So, written by Bud Schulberg and directed by Elia Kazan, A Face in the Crowd. You know, it really does seem like a very prescient movie in the sense prescient movie in the sense that it showed, I mean, you can get into the specifics of what's happened in our culture in the last several years, but even before that, just the idea, there's a line in the film that Walter Matthau's character has, and he's kind of a cynical sort of sellout writer who sort of holds himself distant from the fact that he's sold out, but always retains a little bit of integrity. But he says, a man would have to be a saint to stand off the power that little box would give him, talking about becoming famous on television. And I feel like, you know, at the time that was sort of maybe it feels quaint to us to think, oh, in the 50s, these guys were saying, let's warn people about the dangers of the kind of fame you can have if you are in people's homes the way that television brings you into people's homes. But we've seen that in all kinds of ways differently with like streaming and podcasts. There's all kinds of ways that demagogues can sort of reach an audience that becomes really passionate about them. And I think the movie really does play out this, you know, again, it kind of almost plays against what we think Andy Griffith would do. It's before he was established as this like father figure that he was on the Andy Griffith Show. And so he's playing a real shit heel. And like the start, you can tell he is like, I actually thought from what I knew of the story that he's this drifter who's discovered and kind of catapulted into fame. And then his fame kind of curdles into something else. I'd always thought that maybe he started out as a bit of an innocent or something, but he starts off as a total sleaze and like working every angle and like leering at the female lead of the story, played by Patricia O'Neill, who I thought was great. But no, I just think that there's an interesting character portrait there that does feel like it's rooted in real human behavior and something very relatable. This expert gaslighter who just gets pretty far. The only thing this movie does that I think our reality has shown us that isn't true is that in this has maybe been the first use of it, which became a cliche later in movies, is the hot mic moment being the thing that brings down the villain. I think that we now know in our culture, we've had a president who was one long hot mic moment the entire time he was in office, and it did nothing to dissuade his followers. Yeah. So I feel like we can see that this movie is almost idealistic, as cynical as it is, it's almost idealistic into thinking that the hot mic moment would bring down a demagogue like this, because he gets caught calling his listeners, or his viewers at this point. He's on television, you know, calling them all kind of stuff and saying that they're rubes and that he can make them do whatever and everything. It's like, and you see how it works in the movie, but by now we've seen that a million times in movies. And also we know, like I said,
it just gets explained away. Yeah, right.
Anyway, I guess I'll throw it to you guys. I mean, I found this movie to be pretty compelling, actually sort of like unpleasant and disturbing in some ways at times, but a pretty compelling and interesting movie. So I guess I'll, you know, before I say more, I'd love to hear what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I didn't really have much awareness of this movie at all. Like, I feel like I maybe had heard of it from a couple of different places over the years. But you bringing it up kind of is what really made me more aware of it than any exposure I'd had before. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I mean, I think you hit on it already, which is like my big takeaway from it. It's just how much of a crystal ball this movie felt like, you know, like how predictive, and there's all kinds of little things that stood out to me, of talking like about, you said, television or the power of television or the power of a personality. And also just some simple things like the prescription drug commercials in the movie are basically Viagra, you know. It's like all these things that it kind of was able to kind of predict.
Very satirical in that way,
like this wonder drug thing that was basically a market mover shaker, like, you know, decades later, things like that. And honestly, even just hearing him have lines of dialogue where he calls himself an influencer, you know, like in 2024, that is the word, you know, the word that basically is the foundation of still a lot on TV, but also our modern television, like social media, you know, what's kind of replaced it. To hear a character talk about it like that, for the media or the medium that was like of the time, I just think that is like so kind of crazy, like how predictive that could be. And relevant it could still be, even in a different shape and form in 2024.
Yeah.
But yeah, awesome performances, a great drama. It kind of reminded me of Network a little bit. I think like this movie definitely had influence on that movie. I was reading about this movie a bit and I saw comparisons to that film.
You ever seen Network? Bob Roberts, the Tim Robbins movie?
Yes,
that was also kind of in this vein of like,
yes,
it's like it's also funny, satire, and like the stuff with the drug company, all that stuff, it felt satirical in a funny way. But then it gets mean and sad, and you see how successful the meanness is, and you know it's true. Like, you know that part is something we've seen.
Totally.
Ronald, what about you? Did you want to, what was it? What was the drug? I wish I should have it in front of me. Vigitrex or something like that.
It has some name like that.
Vigitrex or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it made him go berserk. I thought that, really thought that this was, a cool character study. It reminded me of the moment all the kids in Springfield are so beast, happened in Springfield on The Simpsons. There's something about, charisma is a weird thing, man. And, you know, you and I are boring people. You know, none of us are boring people in this podcast. And you know how manipulative charisma can be, man. You know how, like, you've had a captive crowd before and you've realized that, like, you know, you can get people to do more things than you'd imagine, you know, under the, like, there also is something very weird. I mean, nobody talks about that. People don't talk about this enough. There's something about the stage dynamic, you know, people looking up at a person in reverence as they're talking. Sure. There's something really weird about that. You know, that's always been strange to me. It's never really set well with me. That's why I kind of like floor stuff where everybody's kind of on the same level and I can kind of walk around. Those are the best sets I've ever had either way. But watching Andy Griffith kind of tear it up, man. He was so good. And then dynamic that he has with Patricia Neal is just insane. Like they have a chemistry kind of, it's coming off of the screen. You know, when he looks at her, even her disappointment, and when, you know, she sees him coming up becoming this person, almost reminds me of Doom, you know, as we're watching Doom Part 2.
Yes, yes.
For sure.
Yeah, it's like this this person becoming, you know, you know this version of them. And then once they get in front of people and they use that charisma, they're becoming something that you knew that could be manipulated. You knew could become this sort of weaponized thing. And it's scary. It is a scary thing to watch when, you know, let's, you know, there's presidential candidates coming up that, you know, we've seen this sort of charisma being weaponized in ways that have led to people getting hurt, have mm-hmm. led to the Capitol being stormed. It is a real thing. And I think that there's like this assumption. I mean, it's funny the influencer thing came up.
Yeah.
I don't think that people understand that the jumps in language haven't been that great. Slang has been a thing, you know, that's like,
yeah.
But that thing, slang has existed forever. I don't, you know, just like the lady said, geez. She's mm-hmm. like, you know, like that people act like that's like a new thing. I didn't know that it went that far back. You know, just give me 3 G's and I'll, you know, it's just like, oh my God, like you realize that language really hasn't evolved that much. You know, it some parts of it have, but really hasn't. And you know, when you hear these things, our elders would say things like, no idea is original. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. There's a lot of things under the sun that are new. But really, what they're getting at is like the bones of it, right? The sort of the outline of it really doesn't change. That is absolutely true. Our elders were absolutely right. And watching these character studies about these people really are, it's a reflection of, I think that people are trying to put out a warning signal. Whenever these movies come out, I think there's somebody's trying to give us a warning, a fair warning that these figures can come and manipulate us and, you know, do a great deal of evil in the world, depending mm-hmm. on, you know, the position that they're in.
Well, right. I mean, it applies to so many different things, too, Ronald. Oh, sorry. What were you about to say?
Oh, I was just going to say Andy Griffith and Patricia Neal are like, I wanted to watch more stuff with them. If it just was in the first act, my heart was racing when they first met. Like that scene where she tucks the mic away and mm-hmm. and just lets them talk is insane. Like, I don't know what his audition was, but if that was it won me over, man. I don't know what he read to get this part, but yeah.
What does she then say? I'm a sneaky pie or something like that when she's like in the office chuckling with the.
I love her deeper voices.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, I guess we can just go back and forth about her for a second here because I thought she radiated this like intelligence and like strength, and yet also was, you could totally see how he was totally smitten with her. You know what I mean? And everyone's kind of smitten with her to some extent, but she's got that kind of hard charging quality that a lot of, I mean, frankly, people think that female characters weren't good back then, but a lot of writers were writing really good female characters. And in fact, she ends up being the person who sort of affects the most in the story. And again, I feel like the way that she plays that scene where she just kind of breaks down, you know, her shame and guilt over taking such a part in his success and doing it for the money and like hearing herself say that, you kind of feel like that conversation with Mel, the Walter Matthau character, where he kind of tells her, the dialogue was just so good though, because like he says he's writing a book, which again is like that perfect move for that guy to do, where it's like a little bit sellout, but a little bit integrity, you know? And then he starts hitting her with all this rhetoric and she says, oh, I can't wait to read your book, you know, after he says everything he says to her. But no, I feel like there's a lot going on there in that personal interplay that you're talking about, Ronald, where you almost could watch a play about them getting to know each other. And I did think it might have taken longer to get to the point. It's only halfway into the movie before he's kind of thrown her over and she's finding out about him still technically being married and all this crazy stuff. So, but that was maybe the most unsettling portion of the movie that really felt very modern in the way that it was depicting the old men at the like majorette demonstration, like watching the young girls. It was so gross. And in the movie knew exactly what it was doing. And you just, I mean, again, you think that people didn't know about that stuff before 2017 or something like that. But it was actually really interesting to see how that part played right up to them going off and having the shotgun wedding, or not a shotgun wedding, but a you know, an impulsive wedding, and just how that situation goes south. And I guess I'd also say I thought the guy who played his agent, the kind of office boy that becomes his right hand man for a little while, and then it, you know, then he fires when he finds that he's sleeping with his wife. That guy was good too. Like, he had a really cool quality that I enjoyed. And I loved Beanie, his little, the guy who's in the prison cell with him at the beginning. And then later is like the guy who he has as kind of his, come on, Beanie, let's get out of here. You know, like in the last scenes, he's still got Beanie around. Beanie's the one operating the reaction machine.
Which
I thought was also very
pressing
like,
the buttons. Yeah. Oh god.
That was so
that
like
scene was nuts.
That was so meta and crazy, but yeah, it fit. Man. Like, I loved that it was like a payoff to something that was set up earlier where he's like, look at what I invented. And then later when it came into play, I was like, oh my god, this is so great that this guy's like hell in a way that he's trapped in, is that no one listens to him now, you know? And he can just be as crazy as he wants, but no one's listening. But again, we might think in the world that we're in, Lonesome Road's probably, they even say in the movie, what does he say? Like, you'll have some audience, but it won't be as big as what you had. You know, that's how we used to think this situation worked. You know, it's an interesting thing. Kazan and Schulberg, the director and writer, they were the guys that like named names, that were, you know, dabbled in communism and then got, you know, were named names in the 50s. And then kind of had to like earn their way back. And a lot of people never forgave them for the fact that they, you know, that they named names. And if you look into that, like, that was a very crazy time in Hollywood. Like, a lot of people were thinking they were being patriotic by sort of, you know, rooting out anti-American activities. But there were also a lot of people who felt betrayed by their friends for you know, being named like that. Supposedly, the names they gave were names that the government already had, so it was kind of a calculated move. Mm. But either way, there's this black cloud hanging over these guys as they go into this period of making these socially conscious films. Yeah. So I do think you can read into this film as having, like, that warning shot you're talking about, Ronald, about like what they see coming. These were politically motivated guys who had been through some stuff and felt like they had an axe to grind. And so what they're poking at is like both, like, I mean, there's a blatant racism to like Lonesome Rhodes's character and his era and the politics that he's espousing. But there's also this other thing of like the way that he uses it to appear progressive, that scene where he brings the black woman on television and says, like, let's help her. Like, that's another part that made me sick to my stomach, because it was so like realistic, the way that sort of neoliberal, whatever, that thing of like seeming progressive when you're really just lining your pockets, or you're just really trying to look good.
Wow, man. Great movie, though. I'm glad you suggested it. Like, I really enjoyed it. It felt a smidge too long. Like, it felt like a smidge too long. Like, it could have been a 90-minute version of that I would have been like, this is the tightest script I've ever read, I've ever seen.
I think that's the concession towards it being older, is that there is a little bit of like a loose pace towards it. But I think that I almost think it could have been like 10 minutes shorter and it would have been that movie for me. But I did find that I got a little bolt of energy, like, as it was getting close to the end, a lot was going on. So I feel like it kind of picked back up for me. So to me, if a movie ends well, that kind of makes you not feel the length too much. But I'm glad you enjoyed it. That sad little guy who ran the mattress place. Luffler, I think is his name. Mr. Luffler.
It's wild.
He was getting a raw deal from the start. He's like, what's going on? You know?
Abused.
So, Ronald, you're next.
Yeah. So, okay. We are in a very interesting time in film where directors are taking their films and doing new things to them. You know, it's really interesting. There's a three-headed monster that's been kind of talked about in the last, I'd say, 2 months, and especially this past 2 weeks. The three-headed monster is True Lies, Aliens, and my pick, The Abyss.
Ah.
Now, what I'm wondering is, I really want to know this, man. This is like a real serious question. When you watch an old movie, do you want film grain, like the time of the movie? Or do you want all that stuff digitally removed?
Are you asking? Because that's a big philosophical way.
That's a huge thing that's happened. That's like a huge debate that's happening. And but because people are removing that from movies, essentially, sometimes, especially James Cameron. I don't know why he's doing it. And maybe he's like, this is how I wanted it to be, maybe. But
I feel like this
I don't ever really think about it, to be honest. Like, I don't. If it's a movie of that, like of that time or of that, you know, even going back to like, you know, like a movie that's available digitally, like John picked, you know, like I don't know that I think like if there's a better version of it available now.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm like watching it to see if it looks like authentic to the period, you know, like what it looked like when it came out then, as opposed to being like, is this a good presentation? Like, not based on like features.
See, I think that's what you're getting at though, Steve, that is like on the line for me, because I do think there's an aesthetic difference when something is like smoothed out. Yeah. And I think that like what you're saying is true. If I'm watching it and it looks good, I'm not thinking, I wish this looked like something else. I mean, you know, sometimes a Blu-ray into 4K, like there's quality levels where I'm like, I can see the difference at a certain size. I can see how the larger screens get, people need better resolution, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
However, I think that for me, it would be totally based on just like, would I think it looked weirdly smooth? And for me to look at a James Cameron movie and think it looked weirdly smooth, I would have to have a really strong memory of how it looked before. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I've heard people talk about these new transfers and they've been a hot topic. So I don't know. Like, I'm if it's something noticeable that makes it look a little slick, I might think, well, this doesn't quite look as good as I remember it looking. Now, that as good as meaning like artifacts of a medium that we like, which is film. That's the part where there is an aesthetic difference that sometimes shows up and you're like, damn, that looks great. And you find out it looks great partially because it's shot on film. Like, I don't always notice that with my eyeballs, but I do think I can say, I like this better than that. But I don't have a rule about it. You know, like I'm not wishing there was film grain there, but I can sometimes think this movie looks a little just artificially slick. I feel like I'm very sensitive, especially with all the AI art that's out
Me
there.
Me too.
I'm very sensitive to slickness.
Apparently this slickness is not something that anybody's ever seen before. It's not like, this isn't comparative to anything else before. Mm. It's that waxy, like that. I mean, but not for The Abyss. That's why I chose The Abyss. Apparently awesome. True Lies is like, it looks like almost like cartoony. It's that waxy. So I picked The Abyss. I haven't seen it in a really long time.
I haven't seen it.
Ever? Okay,
this I don't is a Johnny know if I've hasn't ever, seen.
I don't know if I've ever. I don't know if I've ever seen it in its entirety. I think I've only seen like 5 minute clips. So this is actually me and John. I'm gonna honestly say my first time seeing it, because if I'm being honest, I don't know if I've ever seen it in its entirety.
I think like many movies,
I just know it's water.
I've said I've seen them because I was at a house when it was rented, and people were hanging out and watching it. And I think there were many times where you go outside and talk or you go, you know, whatever you go to.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there were times where I wasn't paying as much attention to lots of movies that were rented. So that first viewing of a lot of movies for me was hanging out with friends, not always paying attention. If it was a movie that wasn't grabbing me, if it was grabbing me, then I watched it like, you know, like Steve watching Maud Dib get on a worm. I think this one will be fun because this is actually one that I had on my sort of long list of like, the guys are gonna flip when they realize I haven't. There's one big Johnny hasn't seen that I think you guys will be surprised about, and I don't know when it will come up because I guess I'll have to be the one to say it. But there's one I'm shocked I haven't seen.
Yeah,
I remember seeing this. I think I actually saw this in theaters. Like I was like 8 or 9 years old. Like,
oh, I can remember
seeing this movie. With my dad.
How'd you feel when you saw it?
I have good memories of it. Like I'm a fan for sure. And I remember seeing it or watching it again. Like I think in high school or college when I was going through like another run, you know, of Cameron stuff. But like I've always like. The thing with it was like, I was always like, you guys know, I'm always like a super into the Oscars, you know, this won the effects award the year that it came out.
Yeah.
The special effects or visual effects award. So like, it was always like, you know, that's what everybody always talk about. Like it's a good, like I'm a big fan of the movie in general, but like, if you're talking about 1989, you're saying, you know, this is what visual effects look like before and after, it's like, you talk about The Abyss. and and what they did, like with the water effects, like you saying, I know it's about water, you know, it's like, yes, but really what it's about is like what kind of a visual effects they were able to do relating to water, and how kind of crazy it looked for that time.
And I also remember being a guy who was a sci-fi nerd and always has been, like, I always liked, what I do remember liking about what I saw and what I knew of this film is the you know, I like when someone takes a new approach to like depicting alien life or some kind of new life form, I guess I should say, more so than, specifically alien life, but just the idea of like an arrival or something like that, where you're getting a visualization of something that feels more grounded because it feels like, well, I can't put this in a category, and therefore it feels more what it might actually be like if something, you know, if you encountered something like that. So
that's a good pick. Cool. Glad we can watch it. That's crazy.
Yeah, man. I don't think I've ever seen, like, it's funny. I was like getting it that, like, you know, I'd only seen like clips. I don't know if I've ever seen the movie in its entirety. So I'm pretty excited to just sit down and watch it. And it's available on all the streamers. I'd say because I want you to watch the remastered version, I'd say go for Amazon, Vudu, or Apple. You got to get the remastered version because there's
if that wasn't a prereq, it's also on Hulu.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. The remastered one's on Hulu.
Well, I don't know if that's the remastered one. I just know that I remember seeing an ad that it was on Hulu recently.
Okay,
I feel like it would. I feel like now maybe I'm wrong about Cameron, but I felt like these movies haven't been available.
They weren't for a while.
And now there would be a push to make sure that everybody's getting the version he wants. I mean, he seems Lucas-y in that way, that he would want you to see the new version that he thinks is the best version or whatever, but maybe not. Maybe the one on Hulu is the OG film grain version. We'll have to do an exacting side-by-side comparison.
We'll have to
see
compare,
how we
feel. Yes. We'll line them up.
Yeah.
No, I only notice if something looks crappy to me or good to me. I don't really notice. I'm kind of that way with audio too, and I shouldn't say this as an audio guy, but like, I notice if things look, if they sound good or bad to me. I don't really have, you know, like little rules about what makes them good or bad. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I know exactly what you mean. Because there is really just if you like it or you don't like it.
If it works, then it works.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I'm very similar in that way.
I mean, I think I can one day look at the chart and go, oh, actually, I'm supporting this chart of like this, like when I find out a mix is supposed to have the bass at this frequency and you need to EQ your guitars to sound like this. I look and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what I do. I just didn't know the numbers.
Right.
Anyway, that's why this podcast sounds so great to you people that listen to the audio version. It's because I put such careful audiophile thoughts into it. You rednecks and crackers and hillbillies and hayseeds and house frows and shut-ins and pea pickers. You'll take what we give you.
God, he really went on a rant. Like, he did not stop. Like, what? Why would he say that during his show?
Well, the first one I thought was kind of good was when they're leaving the town on the train and he instantly turns to her and says, I was so glad to get out of that dump. And she kind of looks at him like, that's the first time she goes like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
this guy's not who I thought he was.
And by the way, Steve, you tried to say it, but I don't know if people would have heard it. Is it Vitajex?
I didn't want to cut Ronald off. I looked it up. Vitajex.
I got to say, one of the things I love from that conversation is when the guys in the ad agency are like debating moving to this new plan. And the one guy's like, but he says, we've spent tens of thousands of dollars to find out the key words like bracing and zestful. That almost felt like a Mad Men subplot or something like that, the way that...
Yeah, it did. Could have easily been.
Yeah.
Like a Lucky Strike ad.
All right. So yeah, The Abyss. You can go for the remastered. You could check Hulu, see if it's remastered. If it's not, abandon ship. Go find the remastered one that Ronald directed you to.
But, or go find someone who has like two VHS tapes in a... I feel like that's a two-taper. Is that a two-taper?
Actually, I don't think The Abyss was a two-taper.
Maybe I'm wrong. I guess the Titanic was
on brand for Cameron, though. That would have been appropriate.
It's for sure a two laser disc, because I remember my dad had it.
Oh, your dad had that?
Sure, two laser discer.
A two discer. So yeah,
trailers.
I feel like a bunch have come out, and there's also just a lot coming in general coming up soon.
I don't know if we've
mentioned it on the show, but that June is going to be this hotbed of shows that we're happy are coming back, or new shows. So
feels hasty, if I'm being honest. I feel like hasty. June. Let's get into the Julys and August. It feels like they're trying to hit us with all the June fire.
Like, well, I feel like the summer of it all was always like, well, so TV, yes, like that's like that's a thing. But like, even then, you're like summer movie season. Even like, you know, it's like it was like crept up into May and then it crept up into April. And it's like, well, what is summer movie season anymore? But like, yeah, you're right. Like the TV stuff, it's like, June seems to be the bullseye for that. Oh, and with movies, it's like, you know, the big tentpole like lays claim to a weekend, and everybody else tries to find a spot around it, where they can find their, you know, get their scraps and, you know, make their money. So I guess, but
I have some little concept of that right now, Steve. I feel like when we started doing this show or somewhere in there, I became really conscious of like seasons and when they're going to put out the blockbusters. But I feel like I have no concept right now of like, does that even still hold the way that it, I guess it still holds that summer, you still have more big movies then. And maybe the box office, like we got, look at last July when we had Oppenheimer and Barbie, and that's, you know, the big conversation. But I don't know, I guess I just don't feel the same sense of seasons rolling in like I used to. I used to have a real strong sense of like, all the shit that's coming out this summer. But now I'm like, what's coming out this year? I mean, there's a lot of things coming I think are good. But I wonder if I'm also realizing, right, as I'm saying this, that this is because movies keep getting moved around on the calendar and you keep hearing different news about whether they're going to be streaming only or day and date or whatever. So maybe that's a factor too. But does it feel like seasons don't mean as much as they used to?
I mean, I think at the like foundation of it probably still does. I mean, I think that the fall winter definitely is a season more for most of the Oscar awards stuff, just for relevancy and recency bias, like for people that are voting and guilds and things like that. But to your point, like, I mean, things like, you know, what won Best Picture this year came out in July and it was a blockbuster in the middle of the summer, you know. But it is kind of like a foundational thing, you know. Usually the blockbusters that like kind of have the tent poles in the summer are like four quadrant films, you know, schools are closed, you know, it's the movie going season. It's usually the peak of the year. So like, that's all the logic behind that. But it also is the years coming out of a pandemic, you know, where movies were held. Some movies have been held for years and, you know, for whatever reason they found necessary to, you know, not release it on a digital or streaming option. Like a lot did during the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, like it's still a situation where, you know, there's a bit of a bottleneck in terms of like what's coming out now, what was delayed because of the writer's strike. So there's all these things happening in the industry and in the world that have shaken up what a movie season looks like, you know, or has looked like in the past, you know, couple decades on paper, whether it was, you know, a global pandemic or, you know, writers, actor strike, director strike, that was, you know, they basically skipped theirs. But I just, there's really not like a straight path anymore. It's more of like, what needs to come out? What's the best position for us to release it? And really, like, you know, what used to be the doldrums of release season, like, you know, there's definitely still winners coming out in August, in January, February.
Yeah.
Like that whole approach is no longer, you know, it's like, that's a new version of counter programming. You know, it's like, could this be a four quadrant thing that could hit at the end of the summer, or the beginning of the year, whatever, after the holiday season, after the, you know, all the awards things comes out and everybody's just tired of hearing about the same 10 movies. But yeah, I don't know. It's like this week, you know, at the top of the show mentioning, you know, that there's some trailers dropping for movies that come out in a month, in 2 months, in 4 months, in five, you know, it's like, it's a point now where there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out in theaters that these trailers need to be in front of.
Right.
You know, these movies specifically need to be in front of, whether they're these movies that are playing in the month or 2 months ahead are blockbusters themselves. It's a part of the marketing machine, you know, like the trailers for movies coming out in July, August, September, even. They want to have like first looks at these things as people start going to movies over spring break, over, you know, the beginning of the summer season. And the best bet of reaching a four quadrant kind of thing with the tent poles that do exist this summer. But Yeah, I don't know. There's definitely some cool trailers that came out just simply since we recorded last week, and some that are still going to rumored to be coming out this week after we record this. But yeah, we just kind of wanted to mention. Is there one that you wanted to mention first? Anybody?
Alien Romulus is one that I am pretty
much excited, right?
Pretty happy about. I mean, it's like, I don't know, something about that trailer. It looks like equal parts, like, not shoestring, but like efficient budget, like sci-fi film. Like, we've seen every now and then someone will go and really stretch a dollar and make a cool looking sci-fi film.
Sure.
And it also looks like a lush, intense alien movie. I mean, I feel like the trailer has a cool vibe. It feels, there's something kind of scrappy feeling about it. Even though it does, look good. So I don't know. I'm really excited to see. I don't know even what the take is on this one. From what I've heard, the take is relatively low rent, and I think I like that. Just like put some people on an abandoned space station of some sort or whatever it is, or a settlement, and the aliens are there. Like, I feel like we don't need much. I feel like we've had so many different approaches to making an alien movie at this point that just kind of going back to basics feels kind of smart, and that's what this trailer looks like to me. But I don't know, do you guys know more about it than the trailer has indicated?
I mean, only that's really come out in the past couple of days. Like, as Fede Alvarez is directing this film. Most people know him, you know, from, you know, like the Evil Dead remake or Don't Breathe. You know, most people probably recently know him from that. But yeah, like, he's been doing a bunch of, like, he's done some stuff over the past 48 hours literally where he's talked about it a bit more, basically stating that it kind of takes place between Alien and Aliens, and you know, it's supposed to be in canon and basically connecting to really all of the Alien films, but placing it between those two.
Yeah. No, that's an awesome thing to do. Like, that area between those two tells me a lot about the kind of version of the creature we might be getting, or what era of the creature. And it's like the scariest killing machine version of it is right in that sweet spot. So that's a good idea. Also, you know, the Evil Dead remake, I think we all love that movie, right? Or at least that's a movie that we all rate pretty highly.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it's the tone is what they nail. It's like they managed to update the tone of Evil Dead, but also really sort of pay homage to what you want from an Evil Dead movie. And I think that, that's a great idea of that person taking on another iconic thing like Alien, because I could believe that it'll feel fresh. And if what you're saying is true, Steve, that it does keep everything in canon. I mean, I love that, honestly. I'm sick of sequels being like, this one, it goes back to the end of the first movie and everything else didn't happen. It's like, just make another darn movie. And also give it a name that's different. That's another thing. You got to give the Alien series credit. The names, they haven't made another movie just called Alien yet.
Yeah.
You know, which all the other franchises have done.
it's also kind of cool because, like, he was also talking, and I'd recommend, like, trying to find some of these little featurettes he's done. And literally today, this is Wednesday, he's released a bunch of stuff. Well, P.S., like, he's awesome. Like, he's been so cool in social media talking about this movie in the past few days, but, like, basically saying that, like, you know, he tried to limit as much CGI as possible. I mean, almost to a statement where he basically, like, I kind of approached this as like no green screens, you know, or that kind of thing, where they like built the entire, you know, spacecraft, or, you know, the map of that you'll see this movie take. Like, it's a set, and there's practical effects. He's like, so like to be an adult, and what he's like stating, like to be an adult and walk into this set and like see a xenomorph and things like that is just kind of mind blowing.
That's great.
And yeah, and he's like saying, you know, he's shown that Cameron and Ridley have watched the film and
given saw that
great feedback on it, and that's all just so exciting. Like, I just,
he said
I
their
like
notes were different.
Film.
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I saw that competing notes.
Yeah,
which checks out, I think, for their versions of the two films. But yeah, the idea of having like a younger cast, you know, kind of existing in between it, like a Kaylee Spaney, who people recently maybe saw in Priscilla, is like kind of like the lead of the film. But yeah, this trailer was really slick, and I just can't wait. And like Ronald mentioned on our thread earlier, like he was like, this doesn't look like a Hulu movie. And it's like, like it's not, right? You know, it's like it was supposed to be, right? That was the thing. Like last year, they talked about how it was going to be moved to theatrical because test screenings were really good. And you know, I think also seeing like what they did with Evil Dead Rise and that being so successful, which also had the kind of same trajectory where it was supposed to go to streaming and had a theatrical run and was wildly successful. It just bodes very well for this franchise, for him, for, you know, people that want to see more Alien films on a big screen in the theater. And yeah, the teaser was, I thought, pretty slick. What did you think of the trailer, Ronald, or the teaser rather?
I'm ready. I'm all in. I mean, I may be one of the few people that loved Prometheus.
I think you and I are fellow, like,
yeah, we're like Prometheus lovers. Like
I mean, Prometheus, Steve? I can critique the heck out of it, but I love it.
I like / really like, yeah. But I was not a fan of Covenant, but I did like Prometheus.
Covenant was okay, but Prometheus was like,
Covenant was better the second time. And Prometheus, just like everything about it that it's like, there's no movie that I love that much that also has so many problems with, like, the script that could have been cleaned up. Like, yeah, it really feels like it needed a draft. It doesn't really feel like it needed to change the story. It just needed a draft to make the script make more sense. And it's such a strange thing, because, I mean, I think we've actually talked about this, but I feel like you can see where different drafts were melded together without smoothing them out too much, where characters do things that don't make sense to what you found out about that character in another scene. I think that is where people get down on that movie. I also think, just for the concept of the alien, I think it was really cool to expand it and say, like, what about these other kind of scary godlike aliens that have all this power? I can totally see how, though, if someone wants to make an alien movie, that they're like, well, I don't really want to deal with all that. Like, I don't really want to add to that mythology. I want to have a creepy xenomorph chasing people around. I think it adds to the eeriness of it if you think of this alien as having almost like a deeper lineage than that. Like, that's the only problem I have with Prometheus, is that it sort of implies that the aliens that we know are like this recent freak experiment, and not it's as cool as it is to see how the alien comes into being by this combination of creatures and elements. It's like, well, I think it's cooler to picture that it's this almost ancient creature that's been out there forever, and it's this killing machine, instead of like, oh, it's a recently created bioweapon. But it's still scary as hell if you're like in an air duct and there's one in there with you. So that's really what I want to see.
me too. It looks great. Looks really like it's going to be fun. A lot of jump scares. A lot of mist. Oh, lots of mist.
And I don't think we've seen that many face huggers like chasing a bunch of people before. There's like a bunch of them, it looks like. So that's something.
Yeah, you just want that. Like, that's what you want to see. It looks so good, man.
All right, what's our next trailer?
Ronald, you want to pick one?
I'd say the new Fall Guy trailer.
I
feel like, you know, we know what the premise is with Ryan Gosling and, oh God, why am I having a crazy brain fart?
Emily Blunt.
So we saw what the basic premise was in the first trailer, and now we're seeing sort of their chemistry together and some of the misadventures that Ryan Gosling's character gets into as a stuntman, and trying to solve the murder of the star, possibly. It just looks like a crazy movie that's a little bigger than I expected it to be, and a lot funnier. I mean, the first trailer was funny anyway, but Emily and Ryan have this insane chemistry on screen. Like, something's coming off the screen when they're talking. Like, it just is nuts. And, you know, it could be just me putting it on it because they're two beautiful people. But I think there is something going on with them. Like, just in terms of how well they get along on screen. It's really interesting that Ryan Gosling chooses this kind of vulnerable position in a lot of movies, even in Drive, you know, where he was this tough guy that was like, would kick your face in. He was so vulnerable in that movie. Like, there were like these scenes where, you know, he's like assessing things, like, you know, and you can see the pain in his eye, and he just is good at that. He's really good at that, even when he's doing comedy, this kind of push and pull that he does with emotions. I'm really impressed with him. And this just feels like, since Barbie was the only the first movie that he was funny in, which people seem to think the first movie that he was funny in. You know, this will be his second movie that he's going to be funny in ever.
2 in 2 years. Yeah, he's on a roll.
Yeah, 2 in 2 years.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, come on, it's the Nice Guys, right? If you really want to go back and say this is where we found out how funny he was. I remember seeing him do like the physical comedy in that, which feels like this sort of precursor to almost this wave of just him being good at all those elements. And that's why a film like this, and I think Emily Blunt's another person that can do it. This, who's directing The Fall Guy?
David Leitch.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, there's going to be some sure hands on this movie to make it action-packed and entertaining. And you can tell from the trailer it's going for, I mean, yeah, four quadrant, full-on assault on our senses. Like
that's exactly what it is.
Likeable actors, super mainstream kind of feel to the movie, but like also looks like, I mean, I don't know if it's going to take you to crazy places. Maybe it will, like hit people as hard as like a John Wick movie or a movie, something even maybe bigger, like a Mad Max movie or something, where it's just going to be a lot of action and a lot of stunts. And I don't know. I mean, it looks super fun to me. And I think that's something that the first trailer, I got that impression, but this new trailer just, it's like, it tells you a lot. It kind of sells you on the concept a lot. But yeah, this one feels like, I mean, if this one misses, I will almost be shocked. I don't usually feel that way about a movie, but this just kind of feels like a movie that people will be interested to catch when it's coming out. So, and isn't the word of mouth about it really great? Or I don't know if you already mentioned that, like coming out of South by Southwest.
South by, it had its premiere. Like anytime they premiere a movie, you know, roughly 2 months before it comes out, you know, they have obvious confidence in it. And yeah, the word out of South by was very, very positive. Just basically hitting those notes, what you just getting at, John, like just purely entertaining, you know, like funny, romantic, awesome action. Really a love letter to like making movies, and a lot of people talking about that element.
Yeah,
you know, because in the film, like she's a filmmaker, he's a stuntman. They're making a movie, you know, that they're tracking down the star who he's a stuntman for, who is Aaron Taylor Johnson plays, and you know, it just seems like, you know, there's all these bases that can be covered, and it's a pretty big idea for a movie. But yeah, the overall reaction has just been great, and just that idea of like so much fun at the movies, and that's really what they're in this second trailer, especially like really marketing how fun and funny the movie is. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of great like one-liner scenes. It's nice to see, you know, that there's maybe more than one scene that Winston Duke is in. He's
right.
Obviously he's like actually having a conversation with him and Ryan Gosling and a dog. But yeah, I don't know. I couldn't be more excited, because it definitely feels like that lane of movies where it's just like, this is going to be so much fun to watch, and it's going to be so entertaining. And like Gosling is in full on like movie star mode. I was saying on our text thread today, like this is some movie star shit. Like he just looks amazing.
Yeah,
he's funny. He's like swoon worthy. He's just gorgeous. Like he's just like, this is a movie star. He is a movie star. And like Barbie, and if this is a big hit, you know, it's like there's a movie star right there. Like he's you know, of a definitely like of the generation that like there's not many bankable movie stars, you know, still that you would say. There's a handful, and maybe he's kind of coming into that stage of his career, maybe. But yeah, he's always been so entertaining and so funny. And like the ones you mentioned, even I think of even things like Crazy Stupid Love, like, you know, he was very funny in, and I mean, he's definitely had other films where like maybe the movie wasn't like a straight up comedy, but he's always been like The Notebook, you know, that's a romantic drama, but he's so funny in that still. Like, it's just, he's got the chops.
He's good on SNL. He was in that great papyrus sketch about the font, you know?
He's amazing. Like, I love him. I love him.
And I mean, it's don't you think being a Mickey Mouse Club kid, I guess we talked
yeah,
about
Ronald
this
mentioned
on Mike
that last week
about the Barbie performance, the I'm Just Ken performance, but just that, like that showman thing.
Absolutely.
It's like, I don't think it necessarily equals, he doesn't have that overly flamboyant acting that a lot of like theater kid actors have when they get older. Yeah. But what he does have is that weird, I mean, yeah, same thing we said before, I guess, but it's that kind of confidence or something, or just there's a fully formedness to like his technique that I mean, you know, and it took me a while to really get hooked. But at this point, I sort of feel like he's the guy who you go, oh, yeah, he can probably make that work. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He can probably figure out some way in this movie to be funny. And kind of, I like the fact that a lot of the humor seems to be coming from, I mean, it's a good, reliable form of humor is to have the doofus, you know, guy who's trying to be a badass in a sort of like gets roped into a kind of action hero scenario, but is kind of unwilling to do it. I feel like that seems like a very fruitful thing. Kind of similar maybe to the Nice Guys of like a guy over his head, I guess is what I'm saying.
For sure,
he plays that well.
But that new trailer was great.
What else?
What else we got? What other trailers? Was it? Alien.
Oh, the Acolyte, the Star Wars Acolyte, series Star Wars that's coming series in June that came out.
Looks good.
I mean, it looks good. Like, I think the show looks really good. I don't know that the trailer gave me the wow factor of like an image or a scene that just looked so great to me, but the scenes, a lot of them looked cool. I think that the sort of kung fu approach to the fighting they seem to be taking, I think it seems like it could be really interesting. I don't know that the little fight we get really, I don't know. There was a lot about the trailer that was just kind of interesting to me rather than wowing me. But the level of interest I have does feel special for a Star Wars project because, I mean, maybe somebody's watching that trailer knowing what to name any of those characters, but I sure as hell don't know what any of those characters' names are. And I didn't hear the word Skywalker, and I didn't hear the word Palpatine, and I didn't hear the word, you know, I don't know, the Rebellion. So I don't know. To me, I'm sort of like, okay, like go back to a different era, dig into a section of story that we haven't seen depicted before. I'm super encouraged by that. And also just the byline of the show being that we're seeing the kind of growing of the Sith, or we're seeing like from the bad guy's point of view, a story that's unfolding. So I'm intrigued by that notion of like, we see the little Padawans at the beginning. And then one of them, like they say, what do you see? And they say like life and hope and or whatever. And then the one says fire. And fire, I think that might be a flashback or something. Anyway, I'm wondering about what happens to these little group of Jedi that we see in this trailer that look like a plucky bunch of kids. I wonder if they get wiped out or something. I mean, I really am expecting this show to surprise us in some way. When they first pitched it, they talked about it having like a horror almost element to it. They like to say things like that about these Star Wars shows and Marvel shows, like they're all going to have a dramatically different feel, and they don't necessarily. But even if it's just Star Wars pushed a little towards horror and pushed a little towards like mystery, I'm totally on board. So I wouldn't doubt that there's going to be another trailer that comes out closer to release that is a little bit more like finished and wow and like maybe gives you a little bit more of the story you're going to be seeing. But I'm just in for new characters and a new angle. And I think Ronald, you said a similar thing. You said something like you're fine with TV level Star Wars as long as it's good, right? As long as the story is good.
I think that sometimes like I feel like this is going for like some sort of like artsy thing where it's just like a series of scenes without any context. And that is artsy for some people. It just feels like they're going for something that feels intentionally not straightforward and by proxy just artsy-ish. But I'm okay with it. I'm all right with it. I'm okay with it just being a bunch of incoherent.
Well, some of the best Star Wars trailers have been kind of poetic, like what you're describing. I think the problem is this has a poetic feel to the way it's constructed, but the images and the... It's just not quite there. It's just not quite there visually to make you feel like the poetic approach works. But I know what you're saying. It does kind of feel like... That does feel sort of TV. I mean, it does feel like a trailer for a television show and not a movie. Yeah. And that's fine. But it looks like an interesting show.
What else? What else have we seen trailer-wise?
Those were the big trailers I was going to make sure we mentioned. I was hoping the Beetlejuice 2 or Beetlejuice would have come out.
I love that title.
It's gotten the short shrift this week. Like there's been another big trailer like almost every day this week. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they're waiting to release it when it can have its moment. But
they released the name. I mean, not the name, but they released some pictures at least. So we've seen the poster. We know the name. And we've seen Michael Keaton in the makeup.
Keaton looks awesome.
And he looks great. And everybody, of course, they're hyping it. But they're saying things that I like to hear, like how much practical effect work was done in the film. And Michael Keaton seems to be saying that he was surprised almost at how well it worked as a movie. I'm a little worried they're going to try to give us like a heartwarming story about Beetlejuice or something, but I feel like maybe they know that the appeal of that character should be that he's kind of a scumbag and not like redeemable. But if they do it well, because they do seem to be saying the movie is unexpectedly like emotional, and I'm like, what does that mean? But I'm intrigued. Everyone who has come back looks great. I saw someone on Twitter, I believe it was Joanna Robinson, say that they can't believe that Lydia Dietz committed to those micro bangs for all these years.
Yeah.
But I really do feel like seeing those characters moving around in a trailer and hearing the voices, it's going to be an interesting moment, and it might be the moment that makes it really click for you and you're just like, can't wait. And it might be the moment that makes you go, oh, well, I'll see. Yeah. But I'm hopeful. I like, you know, I still feel like Tim Burton can pull something out too. So maybe this is that movie where everybody shows up and makes it happen.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to talk about that next week if they get this trailer out.
Well,
Let's move on.
Anything else?
Seen anything that you want to mention that you've watched? TV, movies, anything?
I don't. Yes.
Let's hear it.
Go. Yes. But it's, I mean, it's, I'm saying it like it's like a happy thing, but the Nickelodeon doc.
Oh, Quiet on Set.
Quiet on Set.
Jesus. That's what I was going to mention too, Ronald. Maybe we'll do a little micro section on that. But you're right. It is not the kind of thing where you're like, oh, you should really watch Quiet on Set. It's just like,
right.
It's like you'll come out of it almost like questioning, like, should we even allow child actors to just happen at all? Like the situations that kids are put in with adults in this professional environment, and yet they're still children and they're having to be around adults. I mean, I don't know. There was so much, even the stuff that wasn't strictly illegal, Ronald, was so unsettling to find out about in that series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe explain to people that don't know what exactly the show is. It's like a 4-episode limited series, right?
Yeah. It's a limited series essentially about Nickelodeon and one of its biggest producers, Dan Schneider, that comes from Head of the Class, late 80s show. It is essentially, okay, so just for context, I'd say like this has been a thing for like 15, 20 years in the internet space, but 5 years ago or so, there was a thread that went around that kind of talked about Dan Schneider's obsession with kids' feet.
Yes.
And some of the strange things that he liked to do with little girls' feet in particular. Sort of how they were filmed, how they were referenced when their feet were shown.
Just how often they were the point of things, too. Yeah, it was really weird.
And how they were captured on TV. So, like, that came out, and then some of the other references kind of created sub-threads out of that, but it's pretty clear at this point. I don't know if anybody doesn't know this, that Amanda Bynes' current state is directly related to some of the experiences that she had during that time while she was on Nickelodeon. It's a known fact at this point. She said it at some point. Amanda Cosgrove and some of the more popular people
Miranda.
In that space.
Miranda.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What'd I say?
Amanda.
Oh yeah, I've combined
Bynes,
it.
Bynes, Oscar.
Yeah. And just these experiences that were. Keenan's been really quiet about it. And every time it comes up, he acts really weird. And I understand because it's like, you know, this guy helped him develop his career. Like he's, you know, it's. But
I can also understand why people don't want to have the Barbara Walters interview about the part of their life. Like, it's like, I mean, I think there's a point where you would say, okay, maybe you should think of future victims. But at this point, the guy's not working for Nickelodeon. It doesn't seem like anybody wants to work with him. So I could see someone just guarding their own sanity more so than their privacy or their career.
For sure. I think it's worth watching for sure. I think that people have these ideas that like this stuff is new. And if you pay attention to the internet, it's not new. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, they're popping up with accusations. Nah, this stuff has been very present on the internet. Don't get it confused.
In fact, there's some timeline stuff you want to know about a couple. There's one actor that I really like that now I want to know what James Marsden was thinking.
And Ray Romano.
Well, Ray Romano was on the show. So I don't know. I don't know that he wrote a letter. I'm talking about those people that wrote the letters defending the guy.
Oh, the letters.
Yeah. That like, oh, that you wonder how much they knew when they wrote those letters saying, oh, he really feels bad about it. And it's like, what this guy's like, because that Drake Bell story is horrifying.
Oh, it's horrible. And his dad being in it just like adds this extra layer of just sadness to it. But it is absolutely worth checking out, especially if you want some context for why that period isn't quite as celebrated as you may think. Because, I mean, we got 8 or 9 shows from this time that are absolute classics, but they aren't talked about with the reverence that they should be because of Dan Snyder's association with it, unfortunately.
You know, and that's the problem with these megalomaniacal creeps, yeah, is they wreck the whole thing. People can't even be nostalgic properly for something that was a big part of their lives. And you see that with Drake Bell even talk. I mean, again, those shows came after my time. So I knew Dan Schneider as the big guy on Head of the Class, you know?
Yeah, in his class,
But I always knew that he had this other kind of life and this other kind of career and everything. And I remembered hearing stories about the weird feet thing a long time ago, but also just him being like weird and like getting people to massage him on the set. There were just like, occasionally there'd be a story about rumors about it.
Oh man.
And it was definitely when Me Too started happening that it was like, okay, now we can find the force to actually push someone out of this position where it's just the idea of the difficult genius. I mean, they talk about it in this doc a little bit. We've talked about it on this show too. It's just like, that's just kind of a notion that is thankfully going away. The idea that you're going to let, because someone's the golden boy, because someone is the idea man, that you're going to put up with shit from them, regardless of whether it's sexual harassment or whether it's just abuse, abusive behavior, which seems like Dan Schneider is clearly guilty of abusive behavior, So
yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's shameful. And you picture kids being, and now that we're all fathers, now that we're all fathers, you picture your kid being in that situation. And that's why that stuff with Drake Bell's dad is so heartbreaking, because you can sense that feeling that he should have been able to protect him from it. And also the sense of like how he tried and wasn't able to, Anyway.
He was boxed out. That's crazy. Did you see it, Steve?
No, I have not. No.
It's something worth checking out.
It's fun. It's a fun watch. I'd say put it on with the fam. Pop some popcorn.
Get some Skittles.
Yeah. That would be like wrong, right?
Sounds good.
Like if you were seeing that, if you were sitting down to watch that, it's like, don't eat brightly colored food. That's the wrong, attitude.
Eat pickles either, right? Yeah.
Oh, yes, like don't.
Strange. Yeah. Anyway. What else? What else have you guys been watching?
That's all for me.
I wanted to mention, I think I sent it on our thread. We had talked about a trailer for a movie a little while ago called Snack Shack that came out in theaters last Friday. It has a limited run currently going. And I think they even announced that it's going to have a digital release April 2nd. Okay. But this is the kind of movie I would say, like, these are the kinds of movies I would love to see people supporting in theaters. These are like these coming of age drama comedies, that they don't really put in theaters very much anymore. And I absolutely love this movie. Like, I was laughing, got emotional, had me crying a little bit. Like, it's just it's like a summer, two best friends. They're always looking for their next, like, they always have these, like, schemes, not schemes, but plans to make money, to become rich. And, one summer, they decide to buy this, or they'll rent out the snack shack at the local pool. They buy it from the city council and they run it for the summer to make money, blah blah blah, and everything kind of happens around it. The film is written and directed by Adam Rehmeyer, who did a movie a couple of years ago called Dinner in America that had Kyle Gallner in it. It's on Hulu. That's also great. So this guy is definitely someone to watch for me, like this filmmaker, because I love this movie. Most people, I mean, Gabriel LaBelle is probably who you'd recognize if you remember. He was Sammy Fableman in The Fablemans a couple years ago, Steven Spielberg's film. And this film is kind of semi-autobiographical from the director's point of view, growing up in Nebraska in the early 90s. And it's just about coming of age, friendships, love, challenges with your parents, challenges with the war going on, you know, at that time, talking about the Gulf War and how it affected this town and some of the kids in this town. And I just, you know, this is like a perfect kind of movie for me. This is like, I can't recommend it enough. Again, I don't know how long or how wide it went this past weekend, how long it'll be in theaters, but in 3 weeks it'll be at home, you know? So I don't want to be the person that says, wait for it to come home, but it's probably the way that most people will be able to find it, because it was only like at one theater around where we live, or maybe one or two. It was at Arundel Mills. That's where I went and saw it at the Cinemark down there. But yeah, I'm a sucker for a nice coming of age story, especially one set like in the decade that I really came of age. So it really kind of hit me in all the feels. Soundtrack is incredible. Really, really, really great performances. But the lead, Connor Sherry, I just want to give him some attention, because he's a star, man. Like, I think Gabriel kind of got like his run in Fablemans, but this kid who plays AJ in the film was just great. I loved him. I loved the movie. Nick Robinson's also in it, who most people probably, I don't know, he was in like the Jurassic World film. He was also in Kings of Summer. Mm. He was also in Boardwalk Empire. You'd know him if you saw him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's also in this, but yeah, just amazing. I honestly, guys, I love this movie so much. Like, it's a young year so far, but it's my movie of the year. Like, there's no question. It's I loved it. And then I don't know if either of you watched. I know I watched the first two episodes of X-Men 97 on.
Not yet.
Plus, I haven't had time yet. I was gonna check it out.
I cannot wait to watch this show.
Like, I came home from work and like Aaron was laughing at me. Like, I felt like I was a kid on Saturday morning watching cartoons. Like, I was like, give me my bowl of cereal and give me my Sunny D. Let's go. And it was so good. Oh my God, dude. I was so excited for this comic series, or this animation series, to come back and to see these characters in a comic, you know, to see these, you know, in the cartoon form that I can just identify so much with growing up. And honestly, like, just seeing like Wolverine and Gambit together, like seeing that, you know, them give awesome attention to Cyclops. Storm has an incredible sequence in the first episode, or one of the first two episodes that they released today. Yeah, this has got like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, like right now. It's like the highest reviewed Marvel thing ever. I think they were talking about this afternoon. I mean, you know, not that's just PR, but
right. But still, it's
but still, genuinely,
it's
universally
the exact
loving this
nostalgia thing. Ride that people are looking like that. Dude, show absolutely. That show was not my X-Men, but I know there's like people that came along a little bit behind me who that was their introduction
to
the X-Men. And one of the reasons why the X-Men have like sort of brand recognition, you know, even for kids that weren't reading comics, because obviously there were still people reading the comics. But I mean, I think there were a lot of people my age that got into the particular run of the comics that was going on at that time, which then honestly influenced, by the time the animation started showing up and the movies later, it was like, that was the era of the comics that stuff was trying to make you think of. Do you know what I mean? The storylines and the characters and the team and all that stuff. So it's interesting that X-Men has had these, and it will maybe soon have its fourth, you know, like wave of like what people know it for. But no, I've seen such a lot of excitement and warmth around this. So even though it wasn't my X-Men, I'm like, I'm glad that it's hitting the spot for people, but it also seems like a really shrewd thing for Marvel to do, because they can start building in little concepts and references and things that are important to where they want to take the X-Men. And it also creates that kind of multiverse idea of like, oh, this is a version of the X-Men that exists under the umbrella. So it just feels like, it almost feels like a little bit of fan service that actually could turn into a success. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like that's it right there. Like, it's like, this was like probably, it's probably like an easy win for them, you know, to like make people happy. Like, you know, definitely of the generation I'm, you know, Ronald and I definitely are, like, this was my exposure to X-Men. This card, it's like, I was telling Aaron, my wife, like, this cartoon, you know, Batman the Animated Series and Spider-Man, like those three animated series were really a lot of my first introduction to a lot of the comic characters, you know, beyond like, you know, obviously Burton's movies, but I mean, like, to really kind of get in and these cartoon series, animated series, like really kind of dove into like the what the comics were doing, but I wasn't reading the comics, you know, like that wasn't my avenue where I met these characters. So yeah, this is an exciting one for me because like I love this show, and it's iconic. You know, the theme song kicks in and you just feel it right away.
Even I know that.
But it's just cool, like too, to see the possibility, like John was just getting at. You know, even if they do, even if they look at this series or look at some of the things this series talking about, and even in these first two episodes, like, and do any of it with whatever they do with X-Men live, live action in the near future. It's exciting to see some of these characters that we haven't seen. Like, honestly, like Gambit is like the one for me that's like never really got realized on screen, in any of the X-Men iterations or even the failed Channing Tatum movie that was supposed to happen. Not that I feel like that would have ever been the right one.
Taylor Kitsch play him in a Wolverine movie or something?
He's in that X-Men. I'm saying,
yeah, but that was like the only time that they put him on screen.
It's weird. Yeah, it's not really. Yeah, it's just like stuff with him and Wolverine is awesome, you know, and like that from the cartoon, and that seeing that stuff again in the cartoon.
Does Wolverine hate Cyclops? Did they ease up on that? Because I feel like he went a little too hard in the cartoon.
It's there. Before. It's there. But it's not. I mean, it's only two episodes so far. But I think it's going to be 8 or 9 total. But or maybe it's 10. But it's like it's cool because it's like it really is. The first two episodes, especially, like really do kind of put the emphasis on like Cyclops as the leader of the X-Men. You know, which the series always kind of. You know, that was the path the series took. But yeah, I don't know. I wanted to just mention it. Everybody's talking about it. It's like, it came out today on Disney Plus. So I wanted to at least mention it on the podcast. But yeah, the first two episodes are out now. And I think that it's like one episode every week or something past that.
And also just to be carry it forward into the kind of super nerd zone, since comics are where it all started, they just announced like, and I guess this is probably them getting ready for whatever their next wave of X-Men stuff is, you know, that Marvel tries to connect the comics to what might be happening in the movies sometimes. So they're relaunching the X-Men line of comics this year. And I haven't been reading it for years, but the teams they announced and the books they announced look really kind of interesting. Gail Simone, who is a really funny Twitter presence and just a great comic book writer. She's taking over the book, The Uncanny X-Men. And just to let you know, the team of this book is Wolverine, Gambit, Rogue, Nightcrawler, and Jubilee. And it looks like...
Oh, wow.
There's a little Iceman in the background, but I think that's just because this is some kind of multi-cover spread that he's on another group. But anyway, that team is the team of the kind of the flagship book that they're going to be starting this summer. So I don't know if that's an indication of what the characters we might see foregrounded coming up, you know, a lot of times the comics try to go for some kind of synergy often with what's happening in the cartoons and the movies. So look for that this summer.
Yeah. I'm so excited about that. Like I've read X-Men comics, you know, my dad's best friend was like a crazy crate full of comics sort of guy. And he would like take out issues and like, this is X-Men. You need to learn this. These people are valuable.
How is your dad me? I don't understand that. That doesn't seem like it should be right.
it's pretty cool. So
did he also want you to keep things nice? Did your dad try to tell you to keep books nice and comic books nice and things like that? Okay.
Yes.
I respect that.
very important to keep things nice. That's all like military stuff.
Oh, yeah, but, I bet.
Yeah. But yeah, X-Men 97. Cannot wait to watch that. I'm going to watch it tomorrow.
Yeah. Hope you dig it. I'm sure you will.
I feel like another thing I plan on watching, this is not something I've watched, but Land of Bad just came out on digital. Mm. And I'm glad you suggested it. It's my kind of movie. I'm probably going to watch it. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm going to watch it this week.
Cool. Hopefully let me know what you think of it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Cool.
Well, there's a show.
That's a show right there. MovieSchmovie.com is the website. You can listen to all of our episodes on that site. And also just subscribe, if you like, to your favorite podcast platform of preference, whatever you want, or whichever one you prefer to use. If you are subscribing to the podcast, hopefully you are, but if you haven't, there's an opportunity there for you to jump anywhere you want to keep in touch with us and make sure you get new episodes weekly. Also have the YouTube option if you prefer the video. route. It's youtube.com/movieschmoviepod. We'll be back next week. Again, Ronald picked The Abyss, preferably the remastered version in the digital platforms that have it, I guess, for rental. Is it rental, Ronald? I guess you were getting that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's for rental. I think about $5. It looks like it's $4.99, $3.99, depending on where you go.
So we'll go over that next week. And whatever else we decide to talk about next week, we'll decide then, probably. But thank you so much for listening. And as always, you've made our day. Thanks.
Bye.
All right, guys, now that the episode's over and the mics are all turned off, what do you really think about our listeners?
I mean, they could be doing more. I don't know, but I'm just me.
So, Steve, you can take, you can take it or leave it.
SOBs.
And you think they're all... You know what? I'm right between you guys, I think, in terms of how I feel.
It's a safe place to be.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You'll survive, John.
Right. I got a career in this business.
Yeah.